parade before their officer commanding and had to make a request, request permission to get married, and they had to have a note from a minister or something concerning the character of their new bride. And in general, it was granted, but they, in order to protect, I guess, from anybody rushing off after a bad weekend, it was always a 30-day cooling off period. Permission was granted a month hence, if you're available. Mm-hmm. So I had a driver who had got permission, a very nice young lad, and his wedding date came up to the week after we moved in behind barbed wire and sealed off, and they were right out of the world, just prior to D-Day. So he came to me in great state and what he could do, so I made some discreet inquiries and everything was in order. So we took him out. I arranged to meet him in the morning. Officers were allowed out if they had a specific duty. And I told him to meet me just before the guard gate. And our driver, myself, and the Jeep, and he hopped in, and we took him out to where he was going, his wife's, or the bride's home. And I said, "You meet me here tomorrow morning." And I drove off and went about my business. I did have some legitimate business. And
perhaps you might have forged it a little.
So he went ahead and got married, and the next morning I drove out again on business, and there he was. So I brought him home, brought him back to the camp, and no question asked for the guards. And so his honeymoon was, he was married at I think around 11 o'clock, and he was back on duty again by 9 o'clock the next morning.
Very romantic. You finally do get to the continent on D plus 12, sailing from London, and you landed off Bayeux, I guess that is. And ultimately, you and your company commander were sent to Cherbourg to reconnect the main telephone switchboard for the Americans. And I'm just wondering how it is that you wind up working with or under the Americans, as opposed to the British or the Canadians?
Well, the French telephone exchanges were similar to the British ones, GPO equipment, and my company commander was a telephone expert. My expertise was more in the wireless end, but I was familiar, had been trained on. So the Americans had requested through channels that somebody be sent up to give them assist in putting the main switchboard in the city of Cherbourg, mm-hmm. which they were just captured, put it back in working order. And my company commander and myself were detailed for that job. And I think it was a 2-day trip or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What type of technical, or what would be the most challenging technical difficulty would be involved in trying to do something like that? Did you have to, for instance, did the retreating Germans set any traps at all, or did they destroy everything as they went along? Was it a shambles by the time you got to it, or what was your biggest challenge in reconnecting the lines?
Actually, it was a very simple operation. You always had to be careful of equipment or buildings or vehicles that they weren't booby trapped. In this case, they were not booby trapped. We didn't find one, and they hadn't destroyed any of the equipment at all. I think the reason being that the Americans had captured the city so quickly that general chaos had reigned, and no destruction or booby trapping. In fact, I know when I first walked in, the phone rang, and there was a German voice at the other end, so they thought their fridge board was still in their hands.
And aware they didn't catch it yet. Oh, goodness. Thereafter, your unit moved very quickly to the Low Countries. Ultimately, by August 1944, you wound up in Antwerp, and then within a month to Ghent. Did you encounter any difficulty as far as German agents or saboteurs, as far as cutting lines once they've been installed, or German pro-German sympathizers in those areas at all? Or
well, while the week or 10 days I was in Antwerp, it was practically on the front lines. We moved in there faster than we should have, mm-hmm. to set up headquarters. And there was no general sabotage, but there was general
chaos.
Chaos going on. But your question is very pertinent. When we got to move back to Ghent, we were moved back to Ghent principally to regroup after our mad rush across France, and also to build up supporting troops and services for the capture of the lowlands, if you like, and all the marshlands out of Antwerp towards the sea.
Mm-hmm.
That was given specifically to Canadian troops to do,
mm-hmm.
and it took longer than anticipated. Ghent was full of sympathizers. And,
is that right?
To the extent that some of our boys were found in the canals, floating around in the canals. And I had one personal experience. My company commander and I, again, had been out to the local pub one evening. And normally we carried, always wore revolvers and carried our two hats and sidearms. Yeah. This evening, for some reason, my company commander said, "Oh, well, quiet, we won't, we're bulky." And, so we had a couple of drinks, and on the way back, we wished to have a sidearm. So somebody came around the corner with an automatic weapon, and boom, boom. We ducked into the, fell flat in the curb, in the gutter, and he disappeared again. But, didn't hit either of us. But
presumably a sympathizer.
Oh, yes, yeah. Apparently there were not only Germans who had stayed behind that were causing this, but some of the local Flemish people were. The Germans have been in there so long that apparently there's a lot of sympathizers.
Is that right? I find that very surprising. Within a month, January 1945, the Allies were subjected to what I guess became popularly known as the Battle of the Bulge through the Ardennes Forest, which was, I guess, the German Army's last great assault, their last gasp, so to speak. Can you describe I know the Americans in particular were initially quite stunned by that attack. Can you describe the shock of it for the Allies, generally for yourself? I mean, it was, I gather, totally unexpected.
It was a brilliant move on Hitler's part, and unexpected. We didn't think that they had that many troops available. You have to take the battlefield or front in perspective to see why he went there. Of course, Antwerp, he knew, was our main port. All the supplies were coming in, everything had it. So it was a vital port. If he could have secured Antwerp and held it, he'd effectively had driven a wedge between the American troops on the right and our formations on the right, and the 20th Irish Group, the British and Canadians, and other forces on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a very great tactical victory.
Mm-hmm.
So he went through there, he picked the, the weather helped him. He got all, there was a snowfall, and then there was no, although we had superiority in the air, and we had fog and rain and snow for 2 or 3 days, and of course you couldn't fly an aircraft. And that,
sure. So
the weather was on his side.
No air support for the Army. What, essentially, during the time of that attack, what was the role of your unit at that point?
Well, our role didn't change with respect to providing communications for the transportation group that was moving armor around. In
mm-hmm.
fact, it was all more vital that we do that. But I will say that every man that didn't have a job was told to polish up his rifle, and he might be moved forward to become an infantry.
So presumably they found jobs very quickly.
Well, they were setting up second line of defenses if they'd broken through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. After January, after the Battle of the Bulge, by March, you had gotten as far as the Rhine, and I gather the German resistance was fairly stiff and fairly fierce at that point. Was there any thought, given the fact that I guess the Germans were fighting not only for their country but fighting in it at that point, was there any thought given to taking, sort of stripping units such as your own of all available men and putting for a sort of a last push to overwhelm the Germans at all, or that was never seriously entertained at all?
No, there was no need of it because we had our units so not fully up to strength. I mean, they were trained, and our own signal units were fully employed. I mean, providing necessary wireless communications and telephone equipment.
Would you be involved at that point? I mean, you have not only the Canadian, the British, the American armies all in there. Would you be involved at all with providing not only communication for Canadian forces, but would you inter-army between, say, Canadian and American or Canadian and British? Finally, on VE or by VE Day in May 1945, you were involved in moving a Czech armored brigade from Calais to Klatovia in Czechoslovakia. And this surprised me a little bit. You mentioned that there were some free Czechs attached to the Canadian Army. What kind of soldiers were they? How would you describe them as soldiers?
They were good soldiers, motivated, of course. They've been chased out of their own country, and they wanted to get back. Their army discipline left some sort of be desired, if you like, in that they would overrun their objective and then not only put themselves in jeopardy, but also the flanking troops.
Mm-hmm. Caused some problems for people like yourselves trying to run support operations for them. During that time, obviously, we're getting into Czechoslovakia here, and presumably coming from that direction, from the east, ultimately at some point Russian forces, or even scattered pockets of German forces. Did you encounter any German resistance or any small pockets that were sort of determined to fight out to the death, so to speak?
Yes, there were a few diehards, principally disorganized units or small packets of German soldiers who had lost all semblance of organization and have been given no direct orders to lay down their arms. German units that were organized and under full control were coming in to surrender. In fact, we met one in our move to Czechoslovakia. We met one on the road one morning, coming in full regalia, an armored regiment, and we wondered whether they were coming to surrender or had other intentions for a moment or two, but they were surrendering. We did run into subsequently, or one prior to that, one incident, and one later than that, of unorganized bands, if you like, to hold up, and they thought the war was still on, or the objectives of us being there, one or the other. They were rounded up.
Did you, by the same token, did you encounter at all your Russian allies at all? Any contact with them?
Yes, in Czechoslovakia, in the little village of Klatovy, we had the Americans had come in from the south, and the Russians had come in from the east, and because we brought the Czechs back, or just a brigade, not a very large group, as groups go, of course, a brigade, and an armored brigade, and then the British tank transport column was brought the brigade over. Of course, they were the English component, and my cyber officer and myself were the only two Canadians. But we did have some social contact, some of the pubs, we would sit down with the Russians and Czechs and Americans and English, and as I say, two Canadians. Not too much, but we had one or two evenings there together.
It must have been an interesting atmosphere.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
How would you say?
I think the ones that the most ill at ease were the Czechs, because even at that stage the Russians weren't allowed to, along with the Czechs, to get into eastern Czechoslovakia to see their own homeland.
So they figured they saw the writing on the wall. So
I think we all realized that the things were not all as smooth as what they might be.
How did the? I know you had obviously just had limited contact, but from what you can remember, how would you say the Russian soldiers viewed their Western allies, to the British, the Americans, the Canadians? Suspicion, or?
I think they were wary, very wary. And I don't know whether you go as far as say suspicious, but they weren't giving anything away, and they appeared pleased and would socialize with you. The Czechs were extremely friendly, the Czechs civilians. and couldn't do enough for us.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Personally, you, after Czechoslovakia, you were returning to Cologne when you received the message to begin your repatriation in Canada. June 1945, you arrived in Britain and then subsequently sailed from Southampton for Halifax. Ultimately, arriving in Canada in July. And I'm just wondering, as a soldier, as a professional soldier, how did you personally react to quote peace? How did you find that period of readjustment to civilian life?
Well, it was a great relief to be home after five and a half years, and see you in your home province and town again.
Mm-hmm.
We missed the activity of army life, and I think we're overfed. I know that people I was staying with temporarily thought I was sick because my appetite was such, but when you lived on army rations for 5 years, you got along on very little.
Mm-hmm.
Though it was good food. But I think a great many of us, I won't go into detail, found it very hard to adjust back to civilian life and the routine of civilian life.
Were there provisions or tasks by the government to help the soldier readjust in terms of, for instance, if he wanted to further his education or trade, or were there any provisions made that way for to help the returning soldiers?
I never took advantage of education or technical training, but they were, the arrangements were excellent. I know several of my overseas pals went on to further the training either in university and, or they went to technical school and got their electrician's license. And I took.
I guess
that was one aspect. The other thing was your credits that you accumulated so much for service overseas.
And your pre-war experience with electronics, obviously, and plus your wartime experience with wireless and telegraphy. I guess that would stand you in good stead for the post-war if you chose to pursue that career. I mean, you had no shortage of technical expertise.
No.
You stayed with the Army for approximately 10 years after the war. Initially, you joined the Scots Fusiliers in 1949 as a signals officer. How did you find the initial post? I know demobilization occurred very rapidly with the Canadian forces.
Mm-hmm.
Was it difficult to continue on with, in this case, the Army, with, I assume, drastically reduced manpower and equipment and whatnot? Was it a difficult time for to be an armed forces personnel?
Yes, because the equipment was not readily available at that time, though it came out subsequent years. And it wasn't difficult on my part, because I joined, in effect, in joining this regiment in Kitchener, I changed my from signals, though I was doing signals work. The regiment was actually an infantry regiment converted to artillery, i.e. anti-aircraft work. So I had an interesting diversion beside my signal work to keep me interested.
As it prompted me to ask the next question, I know by 1951 you became an artillery officer, and I was just wondering how that's quite a rapid jump from signal to artillery.
Yeah, but it wasn't easy. I was working, I'd gone back to lecture home, and I had to study, it took me 2 years studying at home in the evenings besides my regular army work. We met, we prayed 2 nights a week, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to write, I think it was a 4-hour exam. And then I took the command and staff course the year after that. And that meant driving to Hamilton, a distance of 40 miles there each way, 2 nights a week to take training down there. So.
Mm-hmm. And you were promoted at that time to the rank of Lieutenant Colonel, which was your rank upon retirement, ultimately, in 1957. Did you, just as an aside here, through these years, of course, Korea comes and goes between 1950 and 1953. any thought to, during those years, either personally or with your fellow staff officers, at least initially, I guess especially after the Chinese got involved, that this could be yet another world war, or?
Well, several of our NCOs volunteered, went to Korea,
mm-hmm.
came back. I debated it, but at that stage I had a couple of youngsters and
figured you survived one war.
Well, I'd done my bit for a moment, and we didn't think Korea was that a large
mm-hmm.
an operation. And after I had talked it over at home, we decided to stay.
Asking the commander in chief at home.
Yeah.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel Kalaiba, I think we have about reached the end here. I would just like to take this opportunity to thank you for spending some time with us and chronicling your career. And it's been an interesting time for me, and I would like to just thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick. I've enjoyed it too. I've lived some old memories, and you maybe dig up some dates I've forgotten.
Thank you very much.